Welcome everyone to the Friends That Carry On podcast, where we dive deeper into our trips, unpack tips, and everything in between. Now sit back, relax, and get ready to go on a trip with your favourite group of friends.
Hello and welcome to the Friends That Carry On podcast, also FTCO Travel Podcast, a little rebranding starting to happen there. We are a group of friends who like to travel the world and initially started off with trips and trying to create FOMO within our own group of friends and inspire them to travel. And we decided to get together and share our adventures and hopefully inspire others to travel. And if nothing else, give good info and travel tips about our adventures. Today, friends we have in-house, we have myself, Jim Scott, Tony Price, and Brian Romine.
Hey, everybody.
And today we have the pleasure of a great guest. We have Pally Bo, the Radio Vagabond. Pally is from Denmark, and until the last few years has been a force in Danish radio, from a morning host to sales manager, moving up to station manager, and then a co-founder of 17 radio stations. From there, Pally founded Radio Guru. I'm not good at saying that, but hopefully you get the gist of what I'm trying to say there. They do radio productions, campaigns. He does lectures on the subject and has been nominated and won numerous awards for that work. Now, while Pally still has Radio Guru, at age 50, he decided to kind of sell a lot of things in his life, his home and that type of stuff, and head out on the road. And he became the Radio Vagabond. And his goal is to travel the world with a quest of visiting all, I believe it's currently 193 countries in the world. So Pally, welcome to the Friends of Carry On podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
So if I understand things right, you are currently in South Africa. Is that correct?
That's correct. I came just before lockdown to Cape Town, and I've been here ever since. It's not there. They don't have any commercial flights out of the country, so I guess I'm stuck here. But yeah, it's not for me. It's not the worst place to get stuck. I really love both South Africa and Cape Town in particular.
Now, and I want to come back and go in detail on South Africa, but let's back up a little bit and talk about how you decided to just kind of sell everything off and head around the world. What entered into that decision?
Well, I've always lived in the same small rural part of Denmark all my life, and I had two daughters, and I could see at some point they would grow up and graduate and move out of the house. So I thought that's my window to go explore the world. In the beginning, I was just thinking of just trying to live a few years in another country. But then I thought, hey, I can do my work anywhere. So why don't I just live a life on the road and go out and see a few places. It wasn't as big a plan at that time. The idea came to me in 2013, so I could see 3 years down the line they would grow up and move out. So in that time, I toyed with spending 2 years on the road. In fact, in the beginning, I said around the world in 80 weeks, which just had a fun ring to it. But that's only a year and a half, so I thought, no, maybe that's not enough. Then it'll be 2 years, and then it became 4 years, and now I have been traveling for 4 years. I left in July 16, and I have no plans of settling down again anywhere. So I'm keeping on traveling, and the whole project has grown for me. In the beginning, I didn't say that I wanted to go to all the countries. That came later, after I started traveling, actually. Now I'm saying I'm continuing to travel until one of my daughters starts settling down and having a family, and then I probably want to be back home or wherever they are in the world and being a part of that. So yeah, right now, for now, I'm thinking at least 10 more years of traveling, but Yeah, you never know. It can be tomorrow that I get a call from one of my daughters. I don't think that's going to happen. So I joke with them sometimes and say, oh, see, all my friends are having grandchildren. When are you going to give me some? And then they say, oh, settle down. They're 23 and 26 right now. And it's not going to happen anytime soon, I'm sure.
Wow, well, that's pretty amazing. Had you been much of a traveler prior to deciding to go around the world? Is that something that was part of your regular routine, or was this a whole new venture?
I always enjoyed traveling. I did the typical trips for vacation, and I come from a country where we have everybody in the country has 6 weeks of a paid vacation every year. So if I know there's something that makes you Americans jealous. So I did a lot of traveling there. And then I also, because I work in the radio industry, I went to conferences all over Europe and a few in the US as well. And I've been invited to be a speaker. So I went with work to both Iran and Iraq. And India, I've been traveling a lot, but I've never lived in another country. Like I said, it was the same a radius of 20 miles in that area I lived, and not close to any big city. I had been traveling, and but only for shorter trips.
Nice.
So how do you decide, Pally, where you'll be staying and for how long, and how do you choose the type of place you're staying in? Are they all hotels, or is it a mixture of things?
No, very rarely hotels. When I'm staying longer, it's typically an apartment where I get my own place with my own kitchen and my own space. And with the Airbnb, it's become so easy, and especially if you stay around a month, you get a really good discount. So I'm using Airbnb a lot, and then I also, when I do shorter trips, I do couch surfing, I do house sitting. I've done quite a bit of house sitting where I get to stay in a house and take care of dogs or cats or water the plants through trusted house sitters. I've done that a lot, especially in the US and Europe. And then I also stay in hostels. I don't even mind staying in a dorm room, not for weeks on end, but when I'm doing a shorter road trip, it's a good way to meet other travelers, to stay in hostels. So it's a bit of a mixture. The least thing is hotels. It's very rarely that I stay in a hotel, because if you check into one of the chain hotels, you get the same experience. It doesn't really matter if you're in Copenhagen or in Detroit. If you're in a chain hotel, it's more or less the same experience you get. So I try to see if I can get more of a local experience.
Sure. Have you ever found yourself stuck where you wondered if you were going to have a place to stay for the night?
I was going from Brazil to Buenos Aires, and they canceled the flight, and there I was in the afternoon. I didn't know where to go, so I just found a cafe with Wi-Fi and went online and found a hostel I could spend two nights in until I could get on that flight to Buenos Aires. But normally I have booked a place before I go, so I know where I'm going. When I was here in Cape Town the last time, I knew that I was going to stay 2 months in Cape Town when I was here 2 years ago, and I found an Airbnb, just booked it for three nights, and then I found some other options, and then went out to check the area and to before I made the choice of where to stay for 2 months. So, but when I go to a place, I'm not the kind of guy that lands in the airport and say, okay, where am I going? I normally always have that booked.
Gotcha.
A couple of those, the ways you book, some that we do a lot, Airbnb, we do a whole lot. We've done some hostels. But I found interesting that the Trusted House Sitters and then the couch surfing. Now, Trusted House Sitter sounds like that might be a website. Is that, did I understand that right? Or how do you become a Trusted House Sitter, and how do you book that?
Yeah, that's a website. There are a few. There's also something called House Carers, but I'm always using Trusted House Sitters. And you make a profile, and tell something about yourself. I made a small video that I could upload so they could see my face and get the sense that I was somebody they would trust their house and pets to. And then I actually also uploaded a bunch of good recommendations from Airbnb, so I could show how what people... I thought the first house sit would be the most difficult one to get, because once you've had a few and you get a good review, it's more easy to get the next ones. And I think I've done 8 or 9 now, and all of them are 5-star reviews, and so that helps. They get the sense, okay, people think that he's trustworthy. So, and it's a super cool way, because the deal is that no money changes hands. They get somebody to take care of their pets, so they don't have to go to a kennel or somewhere else. And I get a place to stay for free. So typically it's been around a month I've done house sits. And it's something when I know that I would like to be in the same place for a longer time, especially if I have a bunch of work I need to do. I just need a place to live and a good place to be working online, doing production work. And then I get the whole house to myself, and I get the company of a nice dog that I need to walk once in a while, and some cats that curl up when I'm watching Netflix at night, and it's really a nice way, and it's something I enjoy doing, and something I know for sure I'm going to be using again.
That's pretty cool.
That is cool, because on the flip side, one of our bigger problems with traveling for my wife and I, our kids are older, so they're easy to. They're either taking care of themselves or it's not a problem to get a sitter, but our dogs, that's a whole other thing. So I might have to look at it from the other side of being able to entertain that, so we can go on a little bit longer trips from time to time. Cause that's one of our limitations. Hey, we got to get back, cause we don't have anybody else to watch the dogs for another couple of days or whatever it is.
Yeah. Hey, maybe I'd end up staying in your house.
Well, hey, that's certainly a possibility. Certainly a possibility.
If you feel I'm trustworthy. Yeah.
Now, have you ever had any not-so-friendly dogs?
No, I had an experience when I was in St. Louis. I even talked about it in my podcast, because that was a bit embarrassing. You always want to do a very good first impression. And this couple, they trusted me with their two dogs and their beautiful house in the outskirts of St. Louis in a nice, quiet residential area. And they went off on a second honeymoon to Cancun. And they told me, these two dogs, when you walk them, they will never run away. You can just open the door and then put the leash out on them when you get outside. But then the first night, I was cooking some food in the oven, and as I opened the oven, you know, a little bit of smoke comes out of the oven, and that set off the fire alarm.
Oh my!
And it was one of those three fire alarms that were connected. And it was going beep, 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 fire, fire, fire. And I couldn't for the life of me get them to stop. I even took out the batteries and nothing helped. They just kept going. And especially the older dog, he went ballistic. Because I guess the sound, that high squeaking sound, just went into his system. So he was going nuts. And I thought, okay, I can't turn them off, so let me go for a walk with the dogs now as the smoke clears. So I opened the door, and the dog ran away. It just bolted. And I thought, okay, this is not good, but it's a quiet, he'll come back. He's not far. So I put the other dog on a leash, and I locked the door, and the fire alarm was still going. So I just walked and called Remy. And then 10 minutes later, they call me from Cancun, and the wife says, "Hi, we're just here on the veranda with a nice cold drink, and just wanted to check in if everything's okay." So I thought, okay, they just arrived. They just want to make sure that everything, if I needed anything. So I said, yeah, everything's fine. And it's not a good thing to lie, but I thought, I'm not going to tell them, yeah, I nearly burned your house down and the dog ran away. So I said, yeah, everything's fine. Jen's still looking for the dog. And then she says, are you sure everything's okay? And I said, well, yeah, well, Remy just ran away because the fire alarm went off. But I'm sure I'm going to get him soon. And the house is not on fire, so everything's good. And then I thought, oh, shit. I lied to them. Sorry, you have to beep that. And she said, yeah, I know, because somebody just called me because the phone number was on the caller. So just stay at the house. Somebody's coming with the dog now. And then a car drives up, and this big dog is on the front seat just smiling at me. And I was like, how dare you? Yeah, so I thought, okay, will I get a bad review for that? But in fact, they put a very good review in, saying that I was even able to manage a tricky situation where there was a fire alarm that went off for no reason, and I maintained my control. But I thought, okay, they caught me in a lie, so this is not good. But yeah, that was it was a nice dog, but it was a handful.
Sounds like it. Wow,
that's crazy. I can imagine now. It's funny.
And ironically, one of my dogs is named Remy.
That podcast episode is called I Lied to My Hosts in St. Louis. So, yeah.
That's crazy. And ironically, one of my dogs is named Remy, so he'd be the one to run off to. He hates those loud noises or fireworks or anything like that. So,
yeah, I'm perfect for your house because I know how to call that name.
Sounds like it.
Well, Polly, another question. When you were talking about places to stay, and if you haven't been to the location before, how do you end up deciding where your preferential, since you're going to be staying for such a longer period of time, how do you decide whether you stay inside the city, on the outskirts, in a neighborhood? What's kind of your preferences?
Yeah, I try to Google it. TripAdvisor sometimes is a good help. I try to Google best places to stay in this and that area, and then I also use my growing network of people, of other travelers, saying, okay, you've been to Siem Reap in Cambodia, which is the good place to stay, and then sometimes I do what I did here in Cape Town the last time. Just book a few days and then go out looking. Google is my tool for finding a place most of the time.
Yeah, that's kind of how we were doing it as well. But it's kind of an inspiration for me. This is my 50th birthday year too, and I was supposed to be on the road for several months this year. Of course, that all got shot to hell, but hey. And we've talked about living abroad, too. We were supposed to spend a month in France this year. So it's kind of interesting how you just decided to do that. One of the questions I was going to ask you is, like, you said you didn't start out to go longer than 80 weeks. At what point in your travels did you realize, 80 weeks isn't going to be enough?
Well, I made this very, very detailed plan that obviously went out the window a week into my traveling. But I had everything planned down to the last bit. And I think on my list, I had 70 countries of a trip around the world. And then I met somebody who's been traveling for a longer time. And he said, if you keep traveling so fast, you will get travel fatigue, so you need to take some breaks. So I put in some breaks here and there where I would stay a little bit longer just to get the hunger back, because if you move all the time, it just becomes too much. And that's the way I've been traveling. And then in the planning process, I also was, how am I going to do it with my business, and what about the whole tax situation? And now I'm really going to make you jealous, because the thing is, with the Danish tax laws, if you're not a resident, you don't pay Danish tax. Even though I have the Danish passport, And I come from the country with probably the highest tax in the world. We pay 50 to 60% income tax. And still being able to have a Danish income through Danish clients and not pay any tax, that sounded appealing. So when I heard that, I thought, okay, and then it's not 2 years, then it's 4 years. And then I started traveling, and it grew from there. And now it's just until I don't know when.
Well, yeah, that's quite a tax loophole.
To live abroad. Yeah.
So are you still considered a Danish resident?
Yeah, well, I have mostly Danish clients. I have a few international clients as well, like T-Bex. I do the T-Bex podcast, Travel Matters. I've just finished a big project for Lego, which is a Danish company, but it's an international project I've been doing. They just put out a whole new line of product for grown-ups called Lego Art, where you can create a mosaic picture and hang it on your wall. And they hired me to produce the soundtracks for that, just to an added thing on the building experience. As you're building these pictures of something from Star Wars, you can listen to interviews with people who were a part of making the movies. And we also did one about Andy Warhol and one about the Marvel Universe, mostly focused on the old Marvel cartoons, where we spoke to some experts on that as well. And they also did one with the Beatles around the White Album, where I didn't do that soundtrack. It was a British company that did that. But it was something I'd been working on for a very long time, and now I'm working on new project for them. So that's a very good client to have, and it also looks nice on the resume, saying, "Hey, I'm good enough to produce podcasts for Lego." So then I'm probably good enough for most other companies. So sure. Yeah, that's nice.
No, that's real nice.
Well, that's interesting that they allow for you to not have that as taxable income. You know, in the U.S., if you're traveling around, if you're still a U.S. resident, you still have to file a U.S. tax return and pay U.S. taxes.
I know. And I've spoken to a lot of Americans, and I haven't found any other place in the world. And maybe it's something that they will change at some point, but it's totally by the books. And I'm following the Danish tax laws, and I'm not a resident, and my company is not registered anywhere. I'm just a full-time traveler, and when I'm on the move, I can do that. But I know that you, as long as you have the American passport and you don't want to give that up, then the IRS are going to find you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, Brian, you have to save that conversation for the Tax Bot podcast and the three listeners that would tune in for that.
You're talking about the three of us here, right?
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking maybe I shouldn't even talk about it because right. I don't want to raise any flags. And
I will say, as a tax person who's under national tax, I think you're good. United States is just one of those who tax on worldwide income. But you guys only tax on income generated within the country. So since you're out of the country, you should be good to go. So,
Yeah.
So there's the tax
I'm glad,
discussion.
I'm glad we have that right. settled.
Yeah. Who knew that would come up?
The other crazy question I was going to ask, we run into this, and we're not even traveling all the time, is how do you decide between going back to a place that you really liked, but when you're trying to visit so many new places, picking one of those instead?
Yeah, well, sometimes when I edit one of my episodes for my podcast, I'm thinking, oh, why didn't I go to that place when I was there? So I say it so many times in my podcast, oh, this is really a place I'd like to go back to. But at the same token, I also want to visit new places. When I decided to go back to Cape Town, because I've been here a lot before and I just love it here, it was, I could see a lot was going on with the corona situation. So if I'm going to get stuck somewhere, I don't mind it being here. And actually, I was in Bali, and I could have stayed there, but I went to Europe to go to ITB in Berlin, the travel fair, and then I wanted to go to TBEX in Sicily, and obviously both were cancelled. I actually went to Berlin, and then from there I also had a ticket to go to Sicily, but then the whole thing was cancelled, so I thought, no, let me get to down to Cape Town. So I got a ticket to Cairo first and spent a few days in Egypt, where I've never been before, and then got on a flight to Cape Town. And I got here just a week before the lockdown. And I thought, okay, the lockdown's going to be a month, maybe 2 months max. But I didn't know that it was going to be really this long. I'm just so glad that even though Cairo was nice, but I'd much rather be stuck here than in Cairo. It's Cape Town. I don't know if you've been here. It's just such a beautiful, easy place to be. And they speak English, and it's a modern city, and they South African mentality is just something that appeals to me. So the people here are super nice and friendly, and have the same weird sense of humor that I have. So it's very nice here. The only thing is that the lockdown is very, very strict here. You cannot leave the house without having what's it called? A mouth band?
So your face mask?
A mask. Yep. Face mask. Yeah, sorry. They sanitized your hands in every single shop. They got an employee in front of every shop. And then there's the alcohol ban. That you cannot buy alcohol unless you go out in the black market. And the same for tobacco. That's not that's not a thing. And there's a curfew from 9 o'clock every night, so you can't walk outside after 9 o'clock. So it's very, very strict here, but I feel safe, and I live in my own apartment, and I only see a small group of friends, so I don't feel like it's a unsafe place to be, even though the numbers are higher than in many other countries, but there are certain areas where I think you're more at risk than in the city and in the city of Cape Town and where I am. So I'm not afraid to be here. So what was the question again, by the way?
I don't know. We'll have to do a playback. I don't remember either.
I think I do remember. It was how you decide to go to a new place when there's so many other, you know, places you visited before that you like.
Oh, yeah. Is that what started it?
Yeah, okay. I think that was what started
it. Oh, my God. Oh,
I'm not sure if you answered. You may have answered it. I'm not sure.
But I'll tell you what. I mentioned that I had this detailed plan when I started, and a week into the travel, it was out the window, and I've never gone back to it. So for me, it's more like, what do I feel like now? And if I'd been traveling in one continent for a long time, even though the countries are different, it's more or less the same. So sometimes I was traveling a lot in Europe, and I thought, okay, now I need to go to Asia, and I found out a way to go to Asia, and then I traveled a lot there, and I thought, okay, I've had enough noodles for a while, let me go someplace else, and I managed to get to North America and went to Canada and did my first big U.S. road trip, and then sometimes, I want to go somewhere else. What I do sometimes is I go on Skyscanner and I search from here to anywhere. And then just see what comes up, because sometimes it's not the country next door. Sometimes you get a longer flight out of the country, and I said, yeah, I haven't been to this or that place, so let me go there now.
That's pretty cool. It's in a lot of ways liberating. You know, you're doing what you need to do, and obviously you stop and do your work and that type of stuff. But then when you're bored or tired with a certain area, you know, it's kind of like spinning the globe and just hitting it like roulette and going. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I sometimes I travel fast, and sometimes I travel slow. So for me, it's kind of an interval sprint. I sometimes do a road trip where I just spend one night and then off to the next place. But then sometimes I take 3 weeks, 2 weeks, a month, and a lot longer here. I go by what I feel like, and if I feel like now I got the hunger to see new places again, and if I'm work-wise, I don't have to, because if I'm doing a lot of work, I can't be on the road driving all the time. In between, so it varies a lot, and I call it my interval sprint, and I just go for what feels right for me at that specific moment. But to be honest, I have no idea where I'm going next from here. I was planning when I got here, okay, let's get this COVID thing out of the way and let me go traveling to some more African countries that I haven't been to. But right now, when they lift the travel ban, I don't think that I'd be traveling a lot in African countries, because especially the poorer countries, you don't really know if they are affected by COVID or they're not testing. So to be honest, I don't know where I'm going next. I'm just seeing what happens and when they lift the travel ban where I can go. So
you truly are a vagabond.
Well, actually, I counted just before when I came here in March. That was a bit more than 3.5 years, and I counted how many places I've spent the night, and it was 315 different places I've packed and unpacked and spent at least one night. So that makes an average of 4.5 days per night, per place. I know how to pack and unpack, and I know how long time that takes.
Yeah, and where are you on your country count then?
My country count is at 90, so I got a long way to go to the 193.
Yeah, that's still pretty impressive.
Oh, absolutely.
Did you say 93?
90. He's been at 90.
I got a long way for the 193.
103 to go.
Yeah. Much closer. I was going to ask you, so speaking, because this is, I'm actually learning here, because this isn't far removed from what I want to do at some point. So how do you... What goes into your suitcases, and what do you basically have with you if you're spending an average of 4.5 nights in one place?
Careful how you answer that question.
A ton of microphones.
Right.
I have a suitcase. At some point, I was traveling only with a carry-on size backpack, but since I also had a computer bag that was too big to take as a personal item, I thought, okay, let me get a suitcase, because I could fit 11 kilos into my backpack. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much that is in pounds. Right. You tell me. I had a bit up to the 23 kilos that is normal for a flight. So I decided to get a suitcase, and I still have to be careful not to put too much stuff in there, because then it gets too heavy. So I don't buy souvenirs. What I basically have in there, not too much clothes, a handful of t-shirts, a couple of jeans, shorts. I have one pair of shoes. Sometimes I have flip-flops as well. But since I do this radio thing, I managed to get my microphone arm in there, which is a heavy thing. And some people would say that's kind of silly, but I enjoy having it, and I'm looking at it right now. I'm recording my voice with my microphone on there. So it's just a work tool that I enjoy having, so I don't have to sit with the microphone in my hand when I'm recording. And then in my computer bag, I have obviously my computer and then all the electronic gear. So quite a few microphones and a Zoom H6 recorder and a Zoom H1 and a few other microphones. Obviously computer, iPad, and that kind of stuff.
So do you have a storage unit at all, or do you truly, everything you own goes with you wherever you go?
I sold most of my stuff. I sold my house, my car, my furniture. And I mean all my furniture, not a single chair or anything. Awesome. And my wife.
Did you sell her?
By the way, I got much more than I expected. I do have a storage room, but that's for my books and my vinyl records. I got rid of all my CDs as well, but my vinyl records, which is a thing that's a lot of nostalgic for me. Having done radio for a long time, I have quite a few vinyls, and I didn't want to sell those. So my vinyls and my books and a few personal items is in a tiny storage room back in Denmark.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Yeah, I like the concept of fast travel and slow travel too. Everything, when we go, we're pretty much always fast, trying to hit as many places as possible, just because of the nature of, you know, having to get back for work and that type of stuff. But I like the concept of occasionally doing the slow travel and going for a month or whatever the case might be. Now, do you find when you are on one of those month layovers, wherever you might be, or 3 or 4 weeks or whatever it might be, that you are able to even though you're slowing down, see more things? Or is it just more of a rest and relaxation time frame?
Yeah, it is that. And then it's also sometimes I get to a new place. I remember I was in Santa Monica in L.A. Not that long ago, and the Airbnb host was so confused and said, why don't I go out more? Because I was doing work. So I was in the room and in her kitchen for a long time. I just rented a room. And normally when she had guests, she would hardly see them. They would go out in the morning and then go back. And I said, but this is my life. I have a regular job that I have to do. So when I stay the longer places, obviously you get more acquainted with the area and get on a first name basis with the guy who sells you coffee in the coffee shop around the corner. And you get more into what it's like actually living there, because I just try to immerse myself as much as I can. But then I also go out and see things and go out exploring, and I get to see more things when I'm a longer time in a place. So I still get to be the typical tourist, go see the touristy places, but also try to find the hidden gems. And that's also where my podcast comes in handy, because I have an excuse to call people up and say, can I come see you? I think it's interesting what you're doing. So for instance, when I was here the last time, I went on a gin tour. They have a lot of micro distilleries here, and there I got to meet this younger guy running a small gin distillery. And I said to him, "Do you mind if I come back tomorrow, just you and me having a chat, and I bring my microphone, and you get to go on my podcast, and I get to have some more unique stories about what it's like building a place like that?" And that's just one of the many, many, many examples of where carrying a microphone, or it can be a pen, or if you have a blog or anything, that you have an excuse to get experiences that you might otherwise not get. So I find that interesting.
No, that is. I love that idea.
No, absolutely. And even though we kind of do the fast travel, I know by staying Airbnbs and that type of stuff, or apartments as we go, you do get that connection to the locals, or your host has great little local recommendations of you know, other than the touristy stops, here's a great little restaurant, here's a cool little bar, here's a little, you know, site or park or something that isn't as touristy, isn't as crowded type of stuff. So you really get a local flavor, and that's one of the things we've really enjoyed over the years.
Yeah, and then another thing I also do, I try to go to meet people. Being a nomad, there are so many nomad hotspots around the world, and I go to co-work spaces and just do my work there with other nomads around me, and they do events, and I go join them. I used to be a member of Rotary, so I also go to Rotary clubs. Just call them up and say, "Do you mind if I join your meeting?" And they always welcome you in, and it's a good way to meet the locals as well. And that can open doors for everything. They say, "Oh, you you work in this and that. You should meet my friend who's also doing this and that. So I get introduced to a lot of people. I go to Toastmaster clubs. I do all kinds of ways to go out to functions and meet people. But especially being part of the Nomad community is really good because I've done three times I've done the Nomad cruise, where you get to hang out on a cruise ship with it's kind of like a conference on a ship, and you really get connected to those people and you're a part of the Nomad Cruise alumni. So whenever you're going to a new place, you can put on the Facebook page, hey, I'm going to so and so, is anybody there, or do you have any recommendations as to which areas to live in? That's also a great way. So being part of the community is also very, very good.
I was gonna say the Nomad cruises must only be like a 3-day cruise, because most nomads can't hang out for a 7-day cruise, can they?
Well, the first one I did was 9 days in the Mediterranean, and then I did Barcelona to Brazil. That was 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And the last one I did was from Athens through the Suez Canal, stopping in Jordan and Oman on the way down to Dubai. And that was almost 3 weeks. Wow. So it can be more, and sometimes you can buy an internet pass where you get a little bit of connection, but mostly is when you go on these cruises, say, okay, I'm putting an auto reply on my email, mm-hmm. and right now I'm full, because people can reach us all the time, and then we say, okay, I deserve to have a vacation, a break as well, so you put it on there. But if you really need to, you can get online and just go check internet, go check your emails and stuff like that. But it's not on a cruise ship that I upload or download huge files. So
right, sure,
yeah.
So,
but it's really, really good though. The one about the Nomad cruise, because the one I did from Barcelona and Spain to Brazil, we were 500 nomads from 55 countries, and you know what it's like going to a conference like TBEX you went to, and you get to meet some people, but you still go home to your hotel rooms at night, and you maybe hang out at night, go to a bar and this and that. But when you're on a cruise ship, you do everything together. you eat together every single night, and you hang out at the bar, at the pool deck, and you go to workshops. And so you really, really get connected on a completely different level. So I see the Nomad cruises, they're my extended family. And also right here where I am now, in a suburb of Cape Town in Hout Bay, I chose to come here because one of the other Nomad cruises are back here with her family, sitting out the COVID. And I got close to her group of friends, and it's all because of the Nomad cruise. So once they start doing it again, and hopefully they will, I can really highly recommend to go on those.
Nice.
So I'm really curious, what types of workshops do they offer on a Nomad cruise?
All kinds of things. Mostly something that would benefit a nomad, but it can be about SEO. It can be about, I did one about podcasting. It can be about tax. It can be personal development, how to set up a bot on your Facebook, all kinds of things. But then also a lot of fun things as well, ecstatic dance and all kinds of weird stuff. So, yeah, meditation, yeah.
That's really neat, though.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
So I got a quick question, too. Back when you're traveling and how you pick a place to stay, do you rent vehicles, cars, very often, or do you find using public transportation mostly?
I've rented cars. When I was in Bali, I rented a scooter. Right now, I'm actually thinking, I haven't had a car since I've gotten here. I've thought about, should I get a car? But the Uber situation here in Cape Town is so easy and really cheap. So I'm using Uber most of the time. Mm-hmm. But I'm actually thinking seriously about buying a mountain bike, since I'm probably not going to be leaving anytime soon. Just to get out and get a little bit of exercise. And I live very close to that iconic Chapman Peaks Drive. And it's so beautiful. I'm seriously thinking about tomorrow going out and looking for a secondhand bicycle so I can get some exercise and go out and exploring. But most of the time I rent a car when I'm in a place and I'm doing a road trip, obviously.
Cool. Well, we'll have to check back with you to see if you got that bike or not. But Pally, with having gone to 90 countries and kind of, you know, just whatever the mood hits you. Obviously, you've had lots of great experiences, but what are some crazy things that have come up that were totally unexpected and you could never have imagined in 1,000 years would have come up?
Other than a fire alarm and chasing a dog.
Right.
That's... I really don't know what to say to that.
I think the most...
Yeah, the most challenging and exhausting, but also really exciting part of my journey, leg of my journey, was northwestern Africa. I came to Fez in northern Morocco, and it was my plan to head down and visit a bunch of countries. So I came to Fez with my big suitcase. And that's where I found out that flights in Africa, I should have maybe done a little bit of research, but flights in Africa are super expensive. So instead, I chose to do the whole thing overland, all the way down to Guinea. I think it was around 6,000 miles I did overland. Then I shipped my suitcase back to Denmark and said, "Can you please hold on to that to my family back there?" And then I traveled only with my backpack, because getting into small shared minivans and mini taxis would not be a good thing with a huge suitcase. So that's where I did that. And then the challenging and the crazy thing was that it was just you get crammed into what they call a set plus, a seven seater, and it's an old beat up Peugeot. For some reason, it's always a Peugeot station yes. wagon that they and it's from the 80s. The newer models are from the 80s, and they are so banged up. And then they put an extra row of seats, so you get really, really crammed into one of those. And then they put everything on the roof, and then you just keep your fingers crossed that it will stick there. And then you drive on these roads that are full of potholes the size of a bathtub, and cows and camels on the roads. And that can be really tough. And especially when I get into one of those, being the only Western-looking guy, they always look at me and see a dollar sign, so they charge four times the price of everybody else. And if I, when I got more routine, I said, "No, I need to negotiate more." And I managed to get down to, so I was only paying double everybody else. And as a punishment, they said, "Oh, you sit in the corner in the back." So there were no. I'm 6 foot. Three or something like that, and I there were no room for my legs to move, and there was a metal beam right in over my head, so I couldn't scooch down. And every time it hit one of those thousands of potholes, my head went up into this beam, and that was from Gambia to Dakar. So it was quite a long drive. It was not right on the border. We drove along Gambia for a long time. So it was around 8 hours in the back of that. And that was I'm sure it was a punishment for me pushing the price too hard.
That sounds like our Peugeot minivan that we took over the Atlas Mountains from Marrakesh to Zagora.
I can guarantee you, without having seen it, that your minivan was better.
I don't know. That sounds pretty familiar. It had that hump in the middle of the one set of seats that whoever rolled the dice had to ride that for a few hours.
And I kid you not, when I was in Guinea-Bissau and on this bus station, which was just a piece of gravel where a lot of noise, they were tying a live, huge live squealing pig on the top of one of those minibuses. I said, this is insane.
Is that how they powered the bus? Was there a little track that it ran on?
Wow. That's interesting. I have a cousin who works for the State Department, has been in Northern Africa, and I ran into her in Dublin, and she was telling one of those wild stories. You mentioned the cows and all, and they were out for whatever reason, and I'm not going to remember the whole story by any means, but I just remember they were driving, somehow hit the cow, and then when people came to help, instead of helping, they tried to carjack her.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
She did get away. I forget all the details, but cows and wild roads in Africa seem to have a theme there.
Yeah, well, at some point I managed to get shotgun. So I was on the front seat with the driver, and I think it was in Western Sahara, or it could have been Mauritania, driving on a fairly good road. So we were doing maybe 70 or 90. Oh no, not 90. I'm doing kilometers per hour, so we were doing a fairly good speed. And all of a sudden, there was a cow on one side of the road, and my driver, he was just, yeah, he's on the cow's on this side, so I'm driving around on the other side. But when we were 10 yards away, the cow decided to start walking into our lane where we were coming fairly quick. So in the last, you know, when you're at that thing where you think, we are hitting that cow, and I am, there's no question, it's just brace yourself for impact. But the driver managed to just swirl around it, and it was like, whoo, and I could tell his pulse was up, and I just tapped him on the shoulder and said, good driving, man.
Wow.
That's awesome.
It seems like a common theme with driving in Africa. We were in Morocco with those old early 1980s taxi cabs, and then the ride there was just nuts. I mean, the lines were merely a suggestion, and you had camels on the side of the road and and squirreling all over the place. And then Tony mentioned the ride out through the Atlas Mountains, and now your ride through all these places to Guinea and so forth. Just none of them sound as if they go without a lot of excitement.
I'm ready to go back.
Cows and camels and
it
all.
It doesn't matter. I'll take it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, speaking of just random places, Polly, what's a place that comes to mind where maybe you didn't have high expectations or no expectations that you were just really pleasantly surprised when you got there?
Yeah, that was also on that trip. Before I talk about that, I just want to mention when I did some traveling in Europe a couple of years ago, and my two biggest surprises was Albania and Belarus. Both places I did not expect anything. I thought, okay, now I'm here, let me tick off that box and just go there. But Albania, I feel that could be the next big thing. Tirana is a wonderful city, and they have a beautiful coastline. And the same with Minsk in Belarus. It's also very very surprising place for me, so easily a place I could see myself going back to. But on that northwestern Africa, I had some friends who had been traveling to Guinea and the capital Conakry, and they said, now that you're there, you should go there. But this is, you don't want to drive in there because you get stopped by the police and they ask for bribes, and so you should only fly in there. And once you're there, see what you need to see and then get out again, because this is not a very good place. So that's when I did that road trip all the way back to Dakar in order to get a flight. I was in the neighboring country of Guinea-Bissau, and I had to drive all the way back to Dakar in order to get a flight to fly into Conakry. And then when I got there, I thought it was nice. I got to meet some locals through couch surfing. I had a place to stay. I was staying at a small hotel at that time, but through couch surfing, I just posted anybody up for lunch or a drink or something, and three people replied to me, say sure, and there was a guy from Switzerland, I think, or Belgium, working there. A couple of guys from Sierra Leone and a guy from South Africa that I got to meet. And through the meetings with those people, and they told me more about the country, it's easily a place I could see myself go back to. So that was probably my biggest surprise, because my friends had told me that, oh, you don't want to go there. It's not a really a nice place. It's, yeah, go there just to tick off the box and then get out. But for me, I could see myself going back, because I heard so much about what's there. So see, and hardly any tourists. It's a really unexplored country. So for me, that was the biggest surprise, I think.
Nice.
Yeah, I had actually never even considered, the other two, like you were talking about Albania, and it just hasn't crossed my list. I mean, we went to Greece, and I've been through Dubrovnik, but hadn't considered Albania, though.
Mm-hmm. No, and I was expecting so much from Croatia and the whole coastline, and it is beautiful. But in my opinion, Montenegro, which also has a coastline just south of Croatia, it's even more stunning. So Montenegro is really also something I can highly recommend.
Yeah, we were trying to get down there and didn't manage to do that because we went to Bosnia instead. But yeah, Montenegro, I'd like to see that coastline as well.
Mm.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no.
But a country I probably won't go back to is North Korea. not that I didn't like it there, but because I did something that I shouldn't have done. when you go to the country, you can take pictures. I didn't bring all my big microphones, so my podcast episode is recorded only on my iPhone. That was in my suitcase in China that we came back to after the trip. It was a 3-day trip to Pyongyang in North Korea, but we could take pictures, but not of anything border control or military and construction sites for some reason. So before that trip, I just got a new wristwatch with a small video camera inside. I decided to, I thought they're never going to find out, and this is pretty cool. And then I got to say, my name is Bond, Radio Vagabond. that's cool. So, and I brought my daughter, she was traveling with me at that time. So I brought my daughter to North Korea, and as the border control were searching her suitcase or her backpack, I was in the doorway in the train filming everything with my wristwatch and putting it out on YouTube after. And it wasn't until a few months after I thought, what the hell was I thinking? Why would I even consider doing that? It was just so stupid. And if they'd known the little, if they noticed the little blue light flashing in my wristwatch, they might have been, or maybe they knew the camera and knew the. It was, if they'd found out, I'd probably still be there.
You would have been a spy.
It was just. Yeah, it's the stupidest thing. I said, why would I do that? And my daughter was there. So, and then I spoke to a guy, a friend of mine, who's one of the most well-traveled people in the world, Harry Mitsidis. He's almost been to every country in the world twice. And he said he knows North Korea, and he says you can make sure that they have a file on you.
Because you said you're on a list.
You're on a list. So he said, do not go back, because once you check in your passport, they will have an alarm blinking saying, oh, that's the guy who did that. So that's probably not a place I'd like to go back to. But it was, by the way, it was super interesting being there. That's another thing. And I'm glad I went, but I don't need to go back.
Yeah. I'm wondering now that we've actually interviewed you whether or not we should ever go.
You're really,
we are officially on a list now.
You probably have a lot of other reasons on your list why you shouldn't go anywhere.
For people in North Korea listening, these guys have no knowledge of this.
Hey, is there any other countries right now that you really want to go to that you haven't been into yet that you think may be difficult just because of current conditions?
Yeah, well, there are so many countries in Africa that I want to go to, and I'm sure that will happen, just not right now. So there's a lot in the northern part of South America that I haven't been to, a ton of countries in Central America. So I did quite a bit of traveling in South America after the Nomad Cruise I mentioned before. I did Brazil, Paraguay, Uruguay, Argentina, Bolivia, Chile, and Peru. But I haven't been to Colombia. I haven't been further north. So I've been to Nicaragua. I've been to Mexico, but that's even further north. So I want to travel to those countries, and also Colombia and Medellin in Colombia. That's a nomad hotspot. So that's a place where a lot of nomads hang out. So I could see myself wanting to go there as a starting point, and then go to Ecuador and many of the other countries there.
Nice. We're starting to get close to the end of our time, but you brought up your daughter joining you in North Korea. How often does your family join you on out on the road?
Well, at that time, she was having a gap year before university, and I said to her, instead of just hanging out doing nothing, why don't you come out and travel with me for a bit? And she's a YouTuber, and I said, if you help me build my YouTube channel, which is hardly existing anymore, if you do that, I will feed you. So she came out and traveled with me for 4 months, and we did Thailand, Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam, Hong Kong, a bit in China, and then North Korea, South Korea, and Japan. And then we were in Japan, and my other daughter flew out and joined us for 2 weeks. So we were there together. They flew down to Cape Town when I was here the last time. But then I go back once in a while as well, so I get to see them when I go back to Denmark. I've been there every 6 months or so. Now it's been a little bit longer, but we're super close, and we speak almost every single day, or communicate one way or the other. So we're still very close, and now they're in university and busy with that and their life. So they also have to fit it in all between everything else. But I enjoy having visits from them, and something I hope that we can do much more in the future.
Oh, that's nice. That keeps you kind of rooted too, even though you're traveling everywhere. It's good to have that sense of home, sense of family.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, my youngest daughter, she was determined to go to law school, but then that 4 month trip changed her life, basically, because when she came back, she said, no, I don't want to be a lawyer. I want to study anthropology, because that whole meeting with different cultures is just so exciting, and the way people live. So now she's in university studying anthropology. Hmm. So that trip was a part of changing her course of life. So I felt proud about that.
No, that's pretty wild.
That is. And I think all of us can agree. Traveling opens your eyes to a lot of different things, so it changes sort of your mindsets and whatever. It might, you know, as we get older, it might not change specifically your profession or your trade, but it does definitely have an impact.
Oh yes, absolutely. And one thing that I have discovered is that time is moving slowly when I'm living like this, because I always have to give my brain something to work with. Where is the local shop? How do I turn on the electricity? And I have here in Cape Town, if I'm running low on electricity, I have to go to 7-Eleven to buy electricity and stuff like that. It's just something that gives my brain something to process, and that's why the last 4 years for me feels like 20 years. And for somebody who's living the normal day-to-day life, it feels like 1 year. So I think that's super interesting, and it's my way of feeling like I've lived longer. So once I kick the bucket, I will feel like I'm 150 years old.
You're going to have to come up with what is a person that travels for the last 15 years, assuming you retired at a normal retirement age. What does your retirement look like? Most people retire to go travel the world.
Yeah, well, that is so weird, because when I stop traveling is probably in 10, 15 years, and that's when I'm normal retirement age, or even after that. So that's when most people, they think, okay, when I retire, I'm going to travel more, and that's when I reach that point. So, yeah, I just kid myself into thinking, no, I'm going to stick being this age forever, and then I don't really think about it. So yeah, it's weird, the whole thing with time.
Well, that's cool. I don't, you know how they say dogs, dog years are referred to it that way, you know, as 7 years compared to human. I wonder what nomads or a vagabond's years are. Yeah. How that converts.
That is absolutely, yeah, that's right.
Well, we're sort of coming into our time. That went really quick. It's been a very interesting chat, and I know I've had my eyes open to a few different things there. Guys, is there any last follow-ups or thoughts for Pally?
No, we'll just have to stay in touch, Pally. As soon as you're able to hit the road again, curious to see what your future looks like as to where you're heading.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. We will meet at a T-Bag somewhere in the world, or just if our path cross, I'm sure they will at some point. So please stay in touch.
Yeah.
One last thing. I don't know that we really talked about food at all in all of your experiences. Any particular area or type of food experiences that are most memorable, or what you kind of like the most?
I like to try certain stuff and try the local food. I like most things. There was one place in the Philippines I said no thank you, and that was when they offered me balut. I don't know if you know what it is.
No.
It's a hard-boiled egg from a chicken, a normal hard-boiled egg with a nearly hatched chicken inside.
So, oh, yes.
And you eat everything, the tiny feathers, the beak, the bones, you eat everything. And I had to pass on that. But I like to go out and try the local food. But I'm really not a foodie per se. I'm not one of those that go for that. But I enjoy a good meal, and I like to taste what's there. I had kudu yesterday, when we did a barbecue.
What is kudu?
Kudu, I think it's kudu. It's one of those typical African deers.
Mm. Ah.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Wow. Well, it sounds like obviously you've had some interesting food.
yeah.
And turned down some interesting food.
Yeah, it sounds a little more done than others. So.
But I went to a Chinese restaurant when I was in Greenland, and I got reindeer cooked in the Chinese fashion. So that was a mixture of typical Greenlandic and typical Chinese. That was quite interesting.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's not a lot of reindeer, I don't think, in China.
That's different than the normal cat that's in there. So.
Oh.
Poor joke. Anyhow, well, Pally, thank you very much. Do you want to give a shout-out to where people can find you?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I do the travel podcast where I roll tape all the time. It's a lot of field recording and a lot of editing. So it's a travel podcast, but it's not the normal travel podcast. So if you want to give that a listen, it's just called The Radio Vagabond. And you got to remember to put the in there, because otherwise you get the Danish version. I do it both in Danish and English. So The Radio Vagabond and theradiovagabond.com. And that's where you'll find me.
Great. Awesome. Well, fantastic. Well, thank you very much for entertaining our listeners and being a great guest and sharing a lot of good information. Well, everyone,
thank you for having me.
That is Pally Bow with the Radio Vagabond. And that wraps us up today for this week's Friends of Carry On podcast, travel podcast. You can go to our website at friendsofcarryon.com. You can go and subscribe there for free and get our update of our podcast every week and our newsletter. And we've just started a fan page that gives you lots of other benefits, including being in raffle or in drawings for trip giveaway every quarter. So lots of good things on our fan page as well. Anyhow, thank you, and until next time.
Bye, everybody.
Be sure to join the friends next week for another great discussion. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already. You can also find the friends and other content at www.friendsatcarryon.com or check us out on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook by searching Friends at Carry On. Thanks again for joining us, and don't forget to carry on, friends.